Okay, we're here with Wayne Downing, and we'd like to talk with Wayne and ask him a few questions. And Wayne, if you wouldn't mind, first of all, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, originally from New York, the state of New York, born in Queens County, which is close to Manhattan, the borough of New York. Moved out to Long Island, New York, actually a city by the name of Commack, New York, where I actually graduated high school from and actually started my drum corps career in a little town close to Commack called Smithtown, New York. And I guess drum and bugle corps, I started really young. I think I was probably about 11 or 12 when I played in a fife, drum, and straight G bugle corps in Commack. It was really funny. I used playing trumpet in my room, and the house right next door to where I lived, the window was always open, and these poor people would hear me just playing trumpet all the time. So one day I'm up in my room, and I'm watching my next door neighbor walk down the street and walk up my driveway. I'm figuring for sure he's just completely going to ring me for playing trumpet too loud next to his house. He knocks on the door. He goes, how you doing, Wayne? I said, good, good. His name was Chippy. And I said, good, Chippy. He said, so you play trumpet, right? Now I'm thinking, okay. Oh, yeah, I play trumpet. He goes, listen, we're starting this band with the volunteer fire department. Would you like to join?
Interesting.
And I said, well, I'll come down and check it out. So really what it was a little fife, drum, and G bugle corps to help the firemen walk down the street during these parades. Because in the summer in Long Island, every weekend is a fire department parade, because it would always end up at a carnival or a bazaar, which would be the money-making, you know, for that particular city's volunteer fire department. So I went to, well, it was great. It was a great social outlet. So all of a sudden, every weekend, hey, we're going to a carnival. We're going to go take a bus ride, you know, and we'll do all of this. So at this one parade we went to, I was noticing that there was this drum and bugle corps that had valves. Because mine had no valves. But I did play trumpet, but now I'm going, oh, that group had a valve and a slide. And I said, well, this is just really great. And it was the Smithtown Freelancers drum and bugle corps from the city next to us. So I next year joined that drum corps, you know, and started to get involved in what they called marching and maneuvering, because the other drum corps I was in just did parades and standstills. So I was getting involved in, you know, drum corps on that level and competing. And it was actually through the freelancers where I started to see, I went to Randall's Island and I saw the Casper Troopers for the first time and the Hawthorne Caballeros.
Oh, wow. What years were this?
That was probably 65, 66, 67. Oh, maybe 66, 67, 68, something like that. And now I was starting to figure out this drum corps thing. It was pretty cool. So I went and used to buy all the drum corps albums that I could find.
Sure.
So
are those the Fleetwood ones?
The Fleetwood ones. World Open, CYO, Bonham Festival, An Evening with the Chorus at Carnegie Hall. I had all of these, you know. And we just started to become an avid drum corps fan. And then one of my instructors with the freelancers, his name was Teddy Sasso, he was a member of the Sunrisers, which was a senior drum and bugle corps.
Sure.
And we went and we did an exhibition at a Color Guard show with the freelancers, and the Sunrisers were the other drum corps that was doing exhibition. And wow, this was like the next step up, you know. So the next year I went and got involved in senior drum and bugle corps. And it's right then that I graduated high school from Commack High School. And during my period of time in high school, I was the drum major of the high school band. Go figure. Leadership qualities, that was me. Busby and baton and all. I mean, it was hilarious. My father decided to move the family across the ocean, actually across the country, to California. And the year I graduated from high school, I was also marching in the Sunrisers. My folks said, well, we've got to leave, so why don't you watch the house till it closes, okay? March in the Sunrisers in the summer, and then from there, you know, continue on to college.
And where did they go to? Did they go to Northern California or Southern California?
They went to Northern California. And I finished the year with the Sunrisers. Now, I had a scholarship, a full music scholarship, to Florida State University.
Really?
Yeah. And what happened was I had saved up all this money, and during the summer, since my parents had left in early June, I was by myself, 18 years old.
And you spent all your money.
I spent all my money.
Good for you.
So I called my dad up, and I said, "So, Dad, how you doing?" "Oh, great. You know." I said, "Well, I got a problem." And he said, "Oh, really? What's that?" I said, "Well, I don't think I can go to FSU." "Why? Did something happen?" I said, "Well, I kind of spent all my money." And he said, "Oh, really?" He said, "Well, I wouldn't worry about it. I've already got you enrolled in school out here." And I said, "How could you get me enrolled in school like that? How did you know?" He said, "I'm your father. I know these things."
Yeah, I know these things. Yeah.
My father. So he outwitted me. He had me enrolled in school, knowing that I quite well that I, you know, would blow it somehow. Because when you're June, July, August, 18 years old, by yourself
in Long Island,
parties at the house every night. Yep. You know, it's like, it was crazy. So I had heard, you know, learned that we were going to California. So I had a good friend by the name of Don Angelica that was a judge and also a program a consultant for some of the other Better Drum Corps. And he turned me on to a guy by the name of David Shaw. Dave Shaw at that time was the editor for Drum Corps News.
Oh.
And
now, where was Drum Corps News then? Was that in Boston?
No, it was in Jersey, I think. Yeah. I think so, okay. Yeah. So I'm not really sure, but I think it was. And he gave me the address of this Drum Corps. I said, "Do they have Drum Corps in California?" He said, "Well, it's just starting. You know, there's a couple of little corps there. And let me give you the director's name of one of them. And his name is Gail Royer." Mm. And so just write him and, you know, tell him who you are and so forth. So I write Gail a letter and tell him, you know, "I'm the soprano soloist with the Sunrisers and this, that, and the other thing. And I'm moving out to California and I'd love to, you know, be involved." And so I got this letter back from Gail saying, "Yeah, well, great. We'd love to have you, you know, and here's where we rehearse. And this is the time. So when you come out to California, make sure you stop by. We'd love to have you join." So DCA Championship is always Labor Day weekend. Finished DCA Championship, jumped on a plane, flew for the first time, had never been on a plane before, from, I think it was Newark to San Francisco, got off, jumped in the car. Make a long story short, my father bought a house around the corner from Gail Royer.
Isn't that something?
10 minutes away from where Rick Santa Clara used to rehearse.
Wow.
Now, California's a pretty big state. I mean, it was like,
yeah.
I mean, really
the
incredible.
The ghost of Gail.
Right, the ghost of Gail, exactly. So, and then from there, it was just, you know, I joined Santa Clara. I was with Santa Clara 70, 71, and 72.
And you were doing college at the same time?
I was attending college at San Jose State University, pursuing a degree in music. Back in those days, it was just a BA in music education performance. They were combined. Now they separate the education and the performance degrees. Before, they were just a combined degree. Secondary education credential, you know. And at that time, really, Gail hired me. I joined Santa Clara, but then he started to understand that I had some skills in teaching because I had taught some of the drum corps, smaller drum corps in the East Coast. So he hired me to teach the horn line. So actually, in 70, 71, and 72, myself and a couple of really good friends, I think Scott Pearson, Mel Canales, I think maybe even Mike Rubino, were a combined brass staff.
Within the corps.
Right, within the corps. Mike didn't march in the corps. He was actually a music teacher at that time, but he came in and taught. And then 70, 71, 72, you know, did both a playing soloist role and, you know, teaching role with Santa Clara.
Mm-hmm.
In 73, I actually moved down to Southern California for about 6 to 8 months to teach the Anaheim Kingsmen.
Mm-hmm.
After I aged out of Santa Clara, my services were no longer needed. Gail couldn't double dip on me.
Who was actually teaching the brass then at that time?
In
Santa Clara.
At what year?
73.
I think in 73, after I left, I think he hired...
I can't quite remember myself.
Jay... Oh, I'm going to forget Jay's last name. Phil Oles and Jay, trumpet player I went actually went to school with. Hmm. Maybe it might have been Ziggy Jr. I know Ziggy Jr. was in there, Ziggy Kessel Jr. for a while.
Sure.
I can't remember the years, to be honest with you.
Right.
Moved down to L.A., taught the Anaheim Kingsmen for a year. I decided I didn't care for Southern California at all. Came back, finished my degree. When I came back...
At San Jose State.
When I came back, I was still an undergraduate, and I was a junior, and I had the director, not the director, the business manager of the marching band come up to me and say, the marching band position is open, director's position is open, why don't you interview for it? And I said, well, I'm an undergraduate at the school, why should I interview for it? They're going to want... But I think you should interview for it. So I make an appointment with the the chairman of the music department. I go walking in and interview for the job, and the chairman says to me, I notice that you're an undergraduate here at the school. What makes you qualified, do you think, to teach the marching band? And I said, well, Dr. Walters, you know it as well as I do. No, not one teacher on this faculty wants to teach the marching band, and I'm the best qualified person you have to do it. So, and I think I can do a great job. 2 days later, I had a budget, I had an office, I had a secretary.
Oh my goodness.
So I was the director of the San Jose State Marching Band for 2 years, did all the arranging, wrote the drills, taught the band, hired Bob Kalkoff to do the percussion section,
there's a name from the past.
Yeah, huh? Exactly. Had some great drummers, because basically the drum line was combination of Santa Clara drummers and Blue Devil drummers, all kinds of great things. Great color guard, because we had brought all the color guard people in from Santa Clara, It was an all-brass band. So I did that for 2 years, got my degree, got my teaching credential, and then I got a phone call from Jerry Seawright, asked me if I wanted to teach the Blue Devils. I told him no.
Really?
Yeah, I told him no, I really didn't. I was kind of burnt out on the whole drum corps thing.
This year was?
This was 1973.
Yeah.
September 1973. And he said, well, would you at least come up and give us a hand with auditions? He said, I'll pay you $50 if you come up. And back then in 73, $50
of course.
Was like, a million.
Yes, it was.
So I said, okay. So I went down there and spent an entire night, with auditioning the brass players. Had a great time. Lots of great people there. And Jerry said, well, listen, why don't you come back next week? Just so we can kind of finish this up. That was 33 years ago. So I guess I liked it.
33 years ago. And how many brass titles?
20 brass titles, either victories or ties with some other, other great brass sections.
Sure.
Aided by incredible music teachers that have taught with me and been responsible for the quality as well.
Sure.
First of all, obviously Jim Ott, Jack Meehan, Gino Cipriani, John Meehan, Matthew, the current staff there now is just fabulous, has been there for a long time.
Sure.
Plus a cast of thousands of great teachers that have been through the organization.
Right. Tell us a little bit about your Japanese connection.
Well, that's a funny story, because about 12 years ago, I got a phone call from this gentleman with broken English saying, we'd really, really like to have you teach. And I said, I at first I was really kind of standoffish about it, because I didn't speak any Japanese. I was a little intimidated about, trying to teach in a different language or have them even understand me. So I said, well, let me think about it. So I called a couple of people up that had already had the opportunity to go over to Japan, Tim Salzman, sure, and a couple of other people. And I said, they've got this opportunity, and, I'm thinking about not doing it. And they looked at me and said, what, are you crazy? I said, why? He goes, they pay double.
Yeah.
I said, double? He said, yes, you just whatever your daily going rate is, double it and tell them that's what you want. So next A couple of days later, got a phone call. Did exactly that. They said yes. Went down there. It was fabulous. You know, I mean, the society is incredible. You know, they're so structured. They're always prepared. They respect their elders and their teachers. So I fit into both categories now. So it's I've had a lovely time. You know, been connected with the group that's won numerous. You know. Internet, well, not international. I mean, the Japanese Old Japan Marching Band Association Championship, 8 times.
That's Renaissance Vanguard.
Vanguard, right? Yeah, great organization. I just love teaching there now.
You know, now they're associated with a religious faction, aren't they?
It's Soka Gakkai International, or SGI. It's probably, if not the largest Buddhist religion in the world.
Sure.
And you know, a lot of the religions in Japan. Sponsor a lot of the fine arts. It's almost like when the Catholic Church, you know, even in the East Coast, when I was growing up, a lot of the drum corps were Our Lady of Saint Blessed Sacrament, were all
of course
Catholic drum corps.
Yes.
So it's the same thing, you know, in Japan. A lot of the religious organizations sponsor a lot of the youth musical activities and fine arts.
Interesting, and you just don't go to one spot in Tokyo. You still travel a little bit all over Japan to the different.
Right. I used to be completely crazy. I used to teach in Tokyo, Osaka, Nagoya, Okayama, Kagoshima, Kansai, just a lot of different places.
Sure.
But you know, it was one of those things that, like, one trip, I was there for a week. And I, you know, 7 days I was in Tokyo and Japan, rather, and I was in 5 different hotels, taking bullet trains and airplanes. Well, after a while, you just turn into, you know, it's just to be
too much. It's been about 12 years, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's been 12 years now I've been doing it. And so now what I've done is I've isolated all of the groups I work with in Tokyo. So I've got 3 groups.
Gotcha.
Then they're all SGI groups, you know, but 3 groups in Tokyo.
And, how many millions of air miles do you have?
Well, actually, it's funny that you say that, because my anniversary of hitting the 2 million mile, actual mile mark, is probably more than maybe 2 or 3 weeks away. When I go back to Japan, I'll probably hit exactly, it'll put me at 2 million actual miles.
My goodness.
Yeah, ridiculous.
And what kind of benefits come with 2 million air miles?
You're either in first class or business class anytime you fly. you know, priorities in luggage handling, checking in. You know, this is a lot of perks now.
Yeah. And I would imagine that every flight attendant knows your name.
And well, when they get the manifest and take a look at it, United is smart enough to put stars around people that they should, you know, enamor. And Mr. Downey, thank you for your business.
Sure.
You've flown more miles than I have, and I'm a flight attendant.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that you and I have bantered back and forth, you know, throughout the years about flying American versus United Airlines and which first class has hot nuts.
Hot nuts, exactly. Well, see, now, the good news is that United took a lesson from American and now does have hot nuts, which is great.
All right, I just have a couple more questions for you here really quick, and one of them that I want to do is advice today. Lots of young people. The arts is just fantastic everywhere you look. The potential of kids, the training that they receive at such young age. If I was a young musician today and I came to you for advice, what would you tell me?
Well, if someone was really serious about getting in the music performance or writing, industry, the one thing I would say is, you know, pick your favorite instrument that you really feel, you know, a true love with, but also learn to play piano. Piano and piano skills are really, really important, specifically if you're going to plan at all to be in arranging or composing, songwriting, and so forth. So I would say, you know, pick the instrument that you love to play, but also make piano your second instrument. It's invaluable, an invaluable instrument. Even as a teacher, if you're teaching voice, or if you're teaching choir, or if you're just teaching interval training, just having a great second instrument is really, really important. Secondly, I always try to tell my students that really want to go into education or music performance that I don't want to say I try to discourage them, but I try to make them really aware of the financial disadvantages to becoming, you know, a teacher or a musical performer. Because, you know, I say to them, you know, there are only so many jobs in right. so many orchestras across yes. the world.
Sure.
And, yeah, you might make a great salary being, you know, a principal or a second or a third seat, you know, trumpet or trombone or a violinist, but there's, boy, incredible competition for those few seats that do come available every year. You know, and the teacher, you know, unfortunately, America doesn't pay their teachers. Mm. I mean, the salary base is really poor.
Sure.
You know, and the workload is very demanding. Mm-hmm. You know, and I try to, you know, I don't try to discourage them. I try to give them a true life picture.
Sure.
Because, you know, a lot of times when you're in college, you really don't know what you want to do, but you know you've got a talent, and you want to lean towards that talent, and you know that you like to teach. You want to lean towards that, you know, that teaching talent that you have. But and you really never think about, you know, some of the life questions of how do I pay for my house? How do I pay for, you know, my family and so forth? And I want them to at least understand the challenge they will have if they
of
pick
course.
That direction. And I, you know, and it's more me making sure that they're making the right choice for themselves.
Okay. Couple just fun questions before we finish up here. Tell us, all the people who are going to be listening to this, what's your favorite color?
Blue.
Of course.
Actually, it did change.
Yeah, it was red.
It was red. And this is a true story.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, and someone asked me, the first time someone asked me what my favorite color was, I said red.
Yeah.
And that was in kindergarten. And then as I grew older, it changed a little.
Of course, you were a boy.
I'm a boy, exactly.
Favorite food? With all the restaurants you get to travel to, and you know,
I'll tell you what my favorite foods. I won't give you a specific, but there's Asian foods, foods that are influenced from Asia, Southeast Asia, Vietnamese.
Is it the texture or the flavors?
It's the flavors. It's the spices. It's right. The preparations. I could eat Thai food and Vietnamese and. Food and Japanese food I love as well. You just have to have a taste for raw fish. And so.
What's your favorite drink?
My favorite drink, well, that's not even a difficult question. It's Grey Goose, straight up, shaken, with three olives.
What is your favorite movie or DVD?
Wow. You know, this. I don't know if I can tell you if I had a favorite movie or DVD. I can give you, I think, the category of movies that I like.
Sure.
I love science fiction.
Really?
I'm a science fiction fanatic.
Like far-off science fiction or Star Wars?
Star Wars, you know, would be a good, you know. I watched every episode of Star Wars when it came out on TV.
Of course.
You know, and it followed Star Wars The Next Generation,
yeah.
Star Wars Battleship Galactica, Star Wars, you know, whatever, you know, all those crazy films. So I just love science fiction.
Sure. Favorite brass section?
Oh, my favorite brass section actually was... I'm not going to be able to tell you what year it was, but it was the brass section of the Chicago Symphony. I had a great opportunity one year when I came into a drum corps congress here in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, sure.
My good friend Jim Monrath, who was a disc jockey on WFMT, which is the classical radio station,
yes.
was broadcasting all the Chicago Symphony concerts. And he said to me, "Hey, what are you doing this afternoon?" And I said, "Well, nothing." He says, "Well, we're setting up microphones to record the Chicago Symphony doing Mahler's Symphony for 1,000 tonight, and they just happen to be in the Symphony Hall rehearsing. Would you like to watch rehearsal?"
Oh, wow.
And I went, "Is the Pope Catholic?" Of course. So there I was, me and Jim Monrath, the only people in the entire hall, sitting in the first row of the balcony, staring down, watching George Schulte conduct. The Symphony for the 1,000 has men's choir, girls' choir, boys' choir, antiphonal, trumpet, and brass sections throughout the whole, okay, and it's just a symphony of a thousand.
Sure.
So, but I always loved the French horn section and the trombone section of the Chicago Symphony. They always had mucho intensity.
Mucho gusto.
Exactly. We used to call it balls, but that's legal on podcasts. But anyway, yeah, I think that's my favorite brass section. You know, and you know, there are some other great brass sections, but I think that's my favorite.
Okay. And then finally, in closing, let's discuss extremebrass.com.
My new love.
Yes.
My new love. Besides the Blue Devils, okay. I guess it's an attempt by me to provide for all the brass players, you know, in the country or for the world, new literature. You know, there has been really not a lot of new literature written for the brass players. You know, for example, brass players, Aubin, Schlossberg, Clark, you know, a lot of the French studies, and they're all fabulous, fabulous works. But there needs to be something different. There needs to be something new. So as a result, I started developing new methods and techniques and exercises and etudes and characteristic studies. So, you know, I think it's just a great vehicle. I've got my, you know, a number of great products designed by Dynasty, mm-hmm. you know, that I worked with, and yeah. trumpets, baritones, euphoniums, mellophones, tubas, my own slide oil.
Are you doing sales off your website
yes.
with instruments?
Yes, I provide all of the Dynasty instruments, for anyone to purchase.
Valve oils.
Valve oil. My own signature line of mouthpieces. Etude of the month, which is you can purchase every etude every month that I originally designed. You get a monthly subscription. They come to your email address every month. You can take a lesson with me doing cyber lesson.
That's how cool.
Yeah, it's real simple. I think, you know, with all the techies that we have for kids now, that it's just a matter of them creating an MP3 and sending it to me. And I can send back to them an MP3 or a QuickTime movie of me discussing their lesson and evaluating it, giving them a lesson plan of how to rehearse for the next month, exercises to produce, to rehearse rather. Great, great vehicle. And the new favorite is Chop Builders, which is how to develop your range.
Oh, wow.
And people are buying that just left and right. The kids just want to pick.
And they can just go to your website and download that straight from there?
Absolutely. You go to the website.
Come in PDF files?
Yes, comes in PDF file. Go to the website. You make the purchase with your credit card or a purchase order if you're an educator from a school.
How about PayPal?
No PayPal right now, but that's in the works. Hmm. That's in the works. And as soon as the purchase is confirmed, then immediately right to your email address is the entire method.
Very nice.
Download it, print it, and it shows to rehearse.
And finally, just a little bit about the associated with extremebrass.com too is your DVD.
Dynasty of Brass.
Isn't that something?
It's done, well, that's really been the most popular educational DVD for
it's
the past
incredible,
year.
Isn't it?
It's really fun
to watch.
I have so many band directors that have purchased it that have just called me up and telling me how much it's improved their entire brass section and their approach to teaching in general, not only brass. Just with the downloadable PDF files and exercises, tuning progressions.
The whole book comes on a downloadable PDF file, correct?
The whole book, right, is on the. And then you can watch the Blue Devils perform.
In action.
In action, each of the exercises in 5.1 surround sound, multi-angles. You can listen to the mellophones and watch the mellophones at the same time.
Yeah, that's very cool.
You know, and it's got me, commentary, as the exercises are being performed, director's notes and how to implement the exercises. It's very thorough. It's really been extremely successful.
Well, that's great. And the web address for extremebrass.com?
www.extremebrass, and that's X-T-R-E-M-E, extremebrass.com.
Very nice.
Great.
Well, we hope things are going to work out, and all the best to you in the future coming up.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Future is a good thing.